The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your hosts Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact us live this evening, send us an email, instudio101@gmail.com. And now, right to your hosts of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome everyone to Down the Garden Path, where every week we discuss a variety of landscaping topics, down-to-earth tips, and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes. As a landscape designer, I think it is important and possible to have a great garden that is low maintenance. I personally love researching topics and guests that can help us with our low-maintenance gardens. This week on Down the Garden Path, we are going to be discussing water in the garden with Ernest Williams from Aquascape. Ernest Williams is the Territory Sales Manager for Eastern and Northern Ontario with Aquascape for 12 years. He's been in the horticultural industry for 17 years. Involved in many aspects of the business, including warehousing, purchasing, sales, and consultation. He's always trying to encourage people to take the plunge into the water feature lifestyle. When the water feature is done right, they'll never look back. Welcome to the show, Ernest.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Oh, I'm glad. I think this is a great topic, so I'm so excited you're able to join us.
Great.
Hey, Ernest. Thanks again for joining us.
Why don't you start off? Yeah, I know we're gonna. Why don't you start off telling us a bit about Aquascape?
Okay, well, yeah, Aquascape is one of the leading manufacturers of water garden products, sort of in North America and around the world, designing and creating, you know, pumps and filter systems, and a whole philosophy around building low maintenance, almost self-sustaining water features. That can be enjoyed by anybody on a small patio to a large property. So, yeah, it's been an exciting run, and we're continuing to see growth and change and a lot of ways to add water to any landscape.
Oh, that's great, and we love those words, low maintenance, here on Down the Garden Path, don't we?
For sure, yeah. Yeah, definitely. No, the system, it almost works on itself as we try to work. You know, one of our taglines is work with Mother Nature, not against her. So we're really using, you know, water treatments that include a fair number of, you know, beneficial bacteria and a lot of natural processes in order to maintain these water features.
Excellent. Well, that is good to hear. I'm looking forward to learning more.
Cool.
So, Ernest, who is your main business focus? Is it homeowners, landscapers, contractors?
Great question. You know, we typically... you know, our customer base, when I look at my list, it's landscape professionals, contractors that have added water features, the ability to bring those to their clients. But we're also selling to retailers who are going to, you know, retail to the do-it-yourself market as well. A lot of homeowners want to take on these tasks for themselves. So there's retail establishments that are, you know, carrying these products and providing training for homeowners, seminars, and other things to help them do it. The end user, I mean, ultimately becomes a customer because they are using our product And so we've really taken to, you know, social media and other ways of encouraging them to see what's out there and give it a try. So all of the above, I guess I'll have to check as my customers.
That's good. So I know Aquascape carries a variety of different features, different types of products, but are there any, what are the growing trends or the hot topics right now in water features?
Well, just the name itself, water features. For a long time, it was really ponds. Ponds are what we did, what we sold. All the products we had were around ponds. And the growing trend is really around water features, just the ability to have a little bubbling something, bubbling rock. I've seen, I was just at a show this weekend, and there's a big tree stump that one of our landscapers had designed to bubble water from the top of it. It was about 4 feet tall, and it was just basically a big bubbling trunk of a tree.
Wow, that's cool.
So all these different, so water features really is the growing trend. And we've designed products really just making it simple to get water into the backyard or in the front yard, really, or any yard.
Yeah, for sure. I could totally agree with you, because I think when my clients mention having water in their garden, that's how they use it. They say, call it a water feature.
Yeah.
That's
the word.
Yeah. No, it's great, because it really does. I mean, for us, it expands our market. Mm-hmm. Really, ponds are limiting, if you will, just because not everybody wants a pond.
Mm-hmm.
But a water feature, water gardening is another term we use, just because it's a whole other, you know, avenue of gardening available to the avid gardener, and it's kind of something they want to get their blue thumbs in. You know, runs out their green thumbs.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. We'd say too, they're blue thumbs. Yeah, get out your blue thumbs. That's tweetable, Ernest. That's
there
very
go.
Good.
Get your blue thumb on.
There goes Matt tweeting.
Yeah. The phone in hand.
Yeah. That is one thing that's hard to do, is to have a radio show and tweet at the same time.
More power to you. Great.
That's right. So
yeah, those are definitely some trends we see. Just the ability to add, you know, any type of water feature into the yard.
Excellent. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I was going to ask. So we say these water features, but what is a water feature? Are there different types of water features that a homeowner can have, or that Aquascape provides?
There are. So as I mentioned, ponds were always and continue to be a big part of our business. A lot of our catalog is devoted to it, be it, you know, some of the water treatments we provide and the pumps and filter systems for ponds. There are, you know, limitations. Sometimes, you know, maybe a condo board might have rules against open water. So we've developed other products, again, those water features. One is we call it a pondless waterfall. Basically, picture your waterfall and stream not emptying into a pond, but just a gravel basin that's refilled, recirculating that water. So that's a pondless waterfall is another product we sell. And then other fountainscapes, those other bubbling features, stacked urns and smaller patio ponds. So there's a lot of, really, it comes to what's available, what the customer really wants to have in their yard. A lot of, you know, if you picture some smaller subdivisions tightly knit subdivisions where there's not a lot of yard space.
Yeah.
We've developed, you know, patio ponds. You can sit right on the deck. You know, they're most 40 inches round. And that's a way to add, again, water to the garden. You can put a little spitting dragonfly, you know, kind of thing. Water feature that spits into it and recirculates. Maybe there's another term I can use other than spitting, but anyway, just that thought of recirculating the water in
splashing,
that
splashing, how about splashing? Yeah.
Exactly. And then other than that, there's, those pondless features, stacked urns, bubbling rocks, lots of ways to add water. But sometimes it's full sun might be a concern. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the grandkids are over and there's just some concern over, you know, large open water, so the pondless might be more attractive. Sometimes just, you know, the amount of nature that comes once you add water to a yard is something to consider. We can, you know, talk about predator control and other things.
Okay.
But that might be a deterrent to adding, you know, fish to a pond.
Mm-hmm.
So in that aspect, maybe a pondless might be more advantageous or mm-hmm. desirable.
And would you say pondless would be a little bit more budget friendly as well?
In some cases.
Okay.
To be honest, I've seen some, rather elaborate pondless features.
Yes.
Too,
I'm sure there's simple ponds and complicated water features. Yes.
Exactly. And, definitely. No, that the range is quite vast.
Excellent. So if a homeowner decides they'd like a water feature, mm-hmm. where do they start? Is it the location? Is it figuring out the size? Is it budget? You know, what is the best place for a homeowner to start?
Yeah, a lot of it is desire. We've really designed water features, and what we've just seen is when folks are introduced to them, there's so much evidence around moving water being beneficial to our well-being. And so there's that aspect. Just the desire to have a water feature is one thing. And then you look at your yard. How are you going to be enjoying this? Are you, are you traveling a lot and you're not around at all? So then maybe a pondless might be something that you can turn off and turn on when you're around. For retired folks or folks that are home a fair bit and they love fish and plants, and a pond is definitely what to consider. And then you look at the design of your yard. How much space do you have for a feature? And then it just comes down to research. There's so much available to the homeowner, whether it's Facebook and YouTube and other places you can see water features. And, definitely check out the local home shows. This is, we've hit April now, and mm-hmm. so there's definitely one in your neighborhood, I can almost say, categorically. Take a look at the home show. See what's being offered by local landscapers. Visit your, the retailers around that are selling water features. See what's available to you. Do you want to take on this task yourself? Do you want to have a professional do it for you? So those are the places to start. So it really comes down to a bit of research that you want to consider, and then it's just investigating what's available to you.
Okay. So I could see that being tricky, deciding on what the homeowner can do themselves and what they need to delegate to a contractor.
Right. Yeah.
How easy is it for a homeowner to do? Like how much of a DIY project is it?
Mm-hmm. It's funny, whenever I talk on this, I almost wear, both hats. It's just as easy, buy it and do it yourself, but then definitely hire a contractor. But it really is to scale and to scope.
Okay.
We have a fair number of do-it-yourself or DIY backyard kits that are available to the do-it-yourselfer.
Okay.
But it really comes to that do-it-yourselfer. So in our history, what we've seen is a lot of folks will own 3 or 4 ponds, maybe 1 or 2 that they did try themselves and totally enjoyed, perhaps.
Okay.
But then, as the scale and, they maybe not have dug it big enough, and it's a lot of work as well, uh-huh. and there's a fair bit of expertise that's required, and there are companies that have devoted themselves to it. So
right.
there's that aspect where they'll find a trained professional to do it for them. But, to start, I'm a bit of a do-it-yourselfer. I try other things. I'll change my oil for a couple times, and then I'll pass it off to a mechanic to do it for me. But
but
there's that aspect of doing it yourself and then having a professional do it.
Okay. And how are the, I can see the pond being very challenging to do yourself, like you said, digging out and stuff. The pondless, is that something that's a little bit more, can we put a pot, I don't want to oversimplify things, but, I've thought of, putting a pump inside a large ceramic pot and setting that in my garden, and that can't be that hard, can it?
No, for sure. No, it's not. A lot of the fountain skates are definitely features that can be done.
Okay.
But again, it's to scale. We've seen some elaborate fountainscapes that require a professional to do. But we also have some mini fountains, little leaning vases that are, you just dig a small 2-foot hole, 2x2 and maybe 18 inches deep, and you can drop this basin in and then put some rocks on top and you have a bubbling feature. Aside from that, there's professionals that will, you know, dig a larger hole and create, you know, a bit of a more elaborate feature that they'll, you know, I mean, there's soil conditions and access and stone. And again, it's that professional touch that a lot of our, you know, professional landscapers bring to design and, you know, fitting it into what you're, what you're looking for and what you'll enjoy.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Great.
So are there, we're talking about just doing it ourselves. Is there any other really popular misconceptions that, that you find that really hold back homeowners from doing it themselves or?
Yeah. You know, a lot of it is, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions around water and, you know, disease and mosquitoes and other things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those misconceptions are around moving water because the thought is moving water doesn't harbor mosquito larvae. So moving that water through pumps and recirculating that water is actually going to, in some ways, limit the amount of mosquitoes in an area because they are going to try to lay their larvae in that moving water and then they'll be destroyed and eaten by the pumps. And if you've got fish in there, they're going to eat it up. So those kind of myths around water and, you know, the difference between stagnant water and moving water. The other hesitation is probably the amount of stone and rock and the sizes. And I only say that because we try to encourage sort of the natural look of water features, which includes stone, whether it's, you know, large gold boulders, because a naturalizing in a water feature kind of requires a variety of stone sizes as opposed to sort of one hand-placeable size. I do want some larger boulders to offset so it doesn't look like one big sort of 12-inch rock pile.
That's right. So, that's right. Yeah, you're appealing to our design, you know, our design expertise over here. Yeah, we get that. Yeah, for sure. It doesn't need to look like a ball pit with a water fountain in the center, right?
Exactly. A big wet rock quarry yard or whatever. Right?
That's, so, that's right.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then, you know, implementing, you know, I'm just actually looking at a picture of a customer of ours who built one that actually mimicked a bit of a beaver dam. He had some chewed off stone, wood pieces in right in within his water feature. And, so definitely, you know, driftwood and stumps and other things you can add to that water feature. And of course, aquatic plants thrive in water features. So definitely tying in the landscape and then retaining walls that help bring that whole landscape together. The other thing I'll just want to make sure I do cover is lighting.
We've,
you know, have a whole line of underwater lighting. Definitely want to consider that if you're adding any type of water feature.
Right.
But actually, any outdoor, you know, we talk about the outdoor room experience and, you know, kind of extending the inside outside, whether it's, you know, really nice patios and outdoor kitchens and outdoor lighting and ponds kind of complete that. So definitely having lighting within the pond. You know, I encourage, you know, shining it up at a waterfall, having it right in within the pond, and then the lighting we have actually can be used externally too. It's all low voltage LED lighting that will uplight trees and shrubs and signs and other things. So definitely bringing lighting to a water feature allows it to live, if you will, well into the night.
Excellent. And you, and Aquascape sells all of that. The lighting, all the lot. Okay, well, that's good to know that people don't have to go elsewhere, right?
It's all in one place, yeah. And that kind of alleviates maybe some of that fear of being at home if you have a lit water feature at night. It's, you know, more of a safety issue too, right?
Yeah.
Kind of
helps with that. Yeah, no, I you know, argue if you don't add lights, I mean, just think about it. You've just dug a hole, filled it with water, and then turned out all the lights.
Yeah,
okay, you know,
for sure.
At this party, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely have lights for, you know, our entertaining. We all come home. Or I come home late at night.
Yes, we all do, yeah.
Yeah, the party wants to go on till late, and, yeah, you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And for a pond owner, fish tend to be more active at night just because their natural predators can't see them in the darkness. So they will be a little more moving around, and so you can capture that activity with lights.
Okay. I did want to go back to the rock thing, and maybe this is a misconception that I've heard, but I thought there was a certain type of rock that actually isn't good for round ponds, that it actually leaches out.
Oh. Yeah.
Am I correct? Am I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we would discourage the use of a lot of our limestone rock.
Ah, that's it. Okay.
Yeah. So, but that being said, we're in Canada, and a lot of our rock is limestone.
Yes.
So we've, for ease of application, definitely sticking with some of the denser rock, the granites and armor stone around in the ponds.
Okay.
But on the edge and around the pond, that's obviously it's fine to use that limestone.
Okay.
But we've developed, we have a number of products that will help combat that. So if it's so desired, and there's just no talking this client out of using limestone, then we have a few products. One is the it's an ion gen, it's an ionizer for the pond, and it distributes a trace amount of a blend of products to combat algae growth within the pond.
Okay.
And just electronically controlled, so it's not getting out of control and affecting the plants and fish in the pond, but it just a trace amount to keep that algae from blooming.
Okay.
The other misconception is that algae in a pond is a sign of a bad pond, but to be honest, it actually is the sign of a healthy pond. Mm-hmm. There's a fair number of nutrients available for that algae to thrive and grow, but it's unsightly to the eye, and so we try to control it within a pond.
Cool. So okay, that's good.
Yeah, aquatic plants and fish will help control algae too, and just creating a healthy balance will help control algae growth.
And I had one other question about the stone. We talked about using different shapes and sizes with the larger stone. Mm-hmm. Is there anything to consider when you move into the smaller stone and making that natural look?
Definitely, so when we get to the smaller stone, I'm kind of thinking of any of the shelf areas within the pond or on the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm looking for more rounder river rock.
Okay.
In the, 1 to 2 inch size, 3/4 inch to that size, just covering the liner, really. It just helps naturalize it so you don't see any of the components we've used. And then outside of that, the larger stone, maybe starting, 6 to 12 inches or so, and then some of the larger ones, 12 to 18 inches, and maybe a few larger ones, 18 to 24. And what that does is, especially in a waterfall, and this comes down to the philosophy of building ponds, but water tends to, naturally, when you do your research and you're walking through the woodlands and seeing all the waterways and streams, water's always passing through the lowest area in the stream, where it's, over time has either found a way through that low area.
Okay.
So we try and mimic that within the pond design. So you have maybe some framing boulders around that stream in order to give that illusion of water passing through the lowest area. So we've got larger framing boulders and then a spillway through the middle of it. So we kind of duplicating these cascading streams along your stream or in your waterfall in order to, sort of fool the eye to make it seem like it's natural and it's been there all along.
Okay. Wow, that is neat. So that shows you that you do kind of need a bit of a professional sometimes, unless you have a good eye for it.
Yeah.
For sure. So you mentioned liner, so that brings us to, we actually have an email question for you, Ernest.
Great. Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead, Matt?
Yeah. So John is asking, which is better, a pre-molded pond or one that is made with your geotextile or a liner, a plastic liner?
Okay. Well, so for a long time, preformed ponds, various shapes and sizes, Victoria ponds, and I can't remember all the other names we used to use for them, were all the rage, and they were a really simple way to add a little pond to your yard. You dig a hole, drop the preformed in, and try and backfill as best you could. The issue that came with it is because they're so contoured, you almost have to dig the hole exactly that same shape. Or after a little while, the edge starts to give way, and you sort of lose that beautiful shape. So the liner has been a great savior for that, because it conforms to whatever you've dug. So what we use is a combination of an underlayment, which is it's a cloth, a filter cloth, if you will, a geotextile, non-woven, really thick membrane to add a cushion layer underneath a rubber compound. We call it, it's an EPDM rubber liner. And the brand we use is the Firestone brand. It's 45 mil thickness, and it's great for our Canadian winters. It's got a cold crack, so it really isn't going to be affected by the cold up until minus 45 or so. So for all you pond builders that want to be out there in minus 45 weather, you don't have to worry about the liner cracking.
Oh, my goodness.
but the other side of it is really the only thing that breaks down EPDM is ultraviolet rays, UV. And so we offer it's a 20-year UV warranty on this liner. And to be honest, you're putting it underwater, so it's already not affected by the UV.
Right.
As well as, you know, our application work, we're covering it with stone. So it's almost, I'm going to go on radio so I can't say it's a lifetime warranty, but it's almost a lifetime warranty.
Okay.
It'll last for a long, long time. We've pulled up a number of ponds that are, you know, it's fun as the company gets older, going back and, you know, and either redoing or pulling out old ponds, and some of these liners are 20, 30 years old and they're still effective and working
well.
Wow,
that is great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope that answers your question, John, for pre-molded or made with cloth. So, and then I guess you can be a bit more creative then also with the cloth.
Exactly. Yep.
Size-wise and depth-wise.
Yeah. The liner, the EPDM is a great product we use. It anywhere from, you know, 5 foot wide up to 50 feet wide and, you know, 100 feet long, and it can be seamed together. And so I've seen some, you know, rather, you know, massive ponds put together with EPDM liner, as well as some really long streams for pondless features.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a neat product, and again, is great for our Canadian winters here.
Okay, so now I'm going to ask kind of a silly question. But so the one thing to me about the pre-molded is that it would have at the ground level, it's going to have like a clean edge. So how does the fabric, and of course I've never built a pond, but how does the fabric, like how do you create that seal?
Yeah.
Is that a word? Do you know where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I totally see. Yeah. So picture, this is the power of radio.
I know. So that's the challenge with radio. we can't see your drawing.
I'm trying to draw with her.
But you dig a, you're going to dig a hole.
Okay.
Your hole isn't one big box, but you're actually going to create shelves within that. So maybe picture an amoeba kind of, maybe, or a kidney shape, if you will. And then within that, I'm going to dig another smaller hole. So now I've got a shelf created, and shelves are great for ponds because aquatic plants grow at different levels. It does help to naturalize it a bit better. And, you know, so for me, I like to build ponds, you know, that are, you know, 2 feet or, you know, 2.5 feet deep. And so I've got boulders that are going to go within that area. So I'm kind of creating, so anyway, you've got these kind of concentric circles inside that kidney shape.
Okay.
And then you've got a smaller one inside. And I'm going to put boulders around the edges within that hole that are going to come up just a little bit above the shelf beside it. So now I've got a shelf beside those boulders. And I'm going to put another layer of boulders around the edge of that pond. So when I look at the pond, I don't see any of the liner because there's boulders up against that liner that has now come out the side of the pond. So that extra liner that kind of creates the top of the pond, I'm going to fold over, maybe even roll it up, and create a small trench right beside the pond. And then I can backfill soil right up against those rocks so that I can bring my landscape right up to the pond so that I don't really see any of the liner that was used.
Okay.
And I've got, you know, I can plant right up against it. I can mulch right up against it. I can have a stone, you know, river rock edge to the pond. But that's kind of the way I mask the rubber liner within the pond. A lot of this, actually, if you go on, just going to plug YouTube here, but there's a fair bit of information that we've put out on YouTube. If you go to our website, you can sort of visually see what I've been trying to describe. I don't know if that helped at all.
No, Ernest, you
have to slow down because we have Matthew texting.
No, he's drawing.
He's texting everyone how to do it. I'm just saying.
He's drawing me a diagram for sure. But water, now I'm thinking about rainwater. So rainwater isn't, I guess if water goes in the pond, water goes in the pond, like, you know, or behind the pond. Like, I guess I'm thinking if rainwater gets in under the liner.
Under that seal and goes down to the bottom of the pond.
Yes.
Great question. So that's one of the reasons. So I mentioned about that geotextile, the underlayment. So not only does it create a cushion for the liner, for the, you know, you've dug it all out and you've sort of hoped you've cut away any roots that are under the ground or stone, you've removed all that, but it acts as a cushion for that liner. But it also, because of the nature of it, if you can think of any wicking fabric, any water that does build up under the pond wants to sort of wick away to the sides, and that fabric actually wicks that water away.
Wow, that's great. Okay.
So it's actually, almost an essential part of building the pond. We have a lot of people that bypass that step, unfortunately, and sort of are frustrated because sometimes when you've dug into the ground, there's the thermal energy of the earth creates a difference in temperature.
Right.
Either it's cooler in the summer and hotter in the winter down below at that bottom area. And so you end up with condensation on the outside of the liner. And if there's no protection underneath that liner, there's the potential for it to start eroding under that liner.
Okay.
Or building up. And, we've seen the power of hydrostatic pressure kind of pushing even some of those rocks we've placed in the pond, starting moving those away.
Oh, okay.
And so that filter cloth, that underlayment, helps to keep that under control.
Excellent. So that's an important step not to skip.
Correct. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Huh.
The design of it, again, I mean, if a do-it-yourselfer wants to take the time and really go step by step, we've designed one of the ways that the company, the owner of our company, actually calls himself the pond guy, but he got successful because he was building ponds in this kind of 20-step system. And he was, trying to be efficient with he and his crew and other landscapers, wanted to know what he was doing and how he was doing these, ponds in a day, and seemed the customers were happy with them, and how are you doing this? And so he developed a whole system around that. So we have a 20-step philosophy of building ponds.
Okay. So are those 20 steps listed somewhere, or that's like the Aquascape secret?
No, they're totally available. We have it on they're in our catalog and on our website, definitely. Yeah, it's a great way to create it. A lot of people are kind of wary of a system because it seems, I'm a unique creative artist. I don't want to be handcuffed by a system. But what tends to happen is every rock is different, every yard is different, so every pond really is unique. And so we're kind of taking this sort of cookie-cutter approach to building ponds, yet each one is very unique. It's actually almost virtually impossible to build two ponds exactly the same. So we're seeing a lot of, creative artists. That's what a lot of our, pond contractors are, that just like the simplicity of a system they can follow in order to create their unique masterpieces. So.
Right. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask. So just because homeowners, if they're following along, and we've mentioned the website just a couple of times, what is the website that they can maybe look up the 20 steps as we're looking at things as they follow along?
So a couple avenues. So our website, it's www.aquascapeinc.com. And so Aquascape Incorporated, or INC.com. And the other avenue is our YouTube channel. I don't know if I can say it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Aquascape Ponds is the YouTube channel.
Okay.
And there YouTube is tough. For the last 6 years, we've been putting out a video every Friday, and so we've tried to catalog those. Some of them are, product-related. Some of them are around targeting, some of the new contractors out there. And so it's kind of a bit of a not a mishmash, but it's a collection of pond videos. Some of them are, focused on our product, on our pumps, and troubleshooting pumps, or seasonal. Come spring, a lot of ponds are going to be open soon, or the snow's all melted away. at least for this week. It might snow again tomorrow, but you know, but that thought of, you know, hey, it's time to start looking at you know, maybe separating those lilies and, you know, opening that pond.
Yeah. So. Okay. No, that's great. It's good to know. I mean, YouTube is kind of, I think, everything you need to know now is on YouTube.
For sure.
But it's nice to know that it's not some guy out there putting out what you should do. Like, it's you guys have tested it. It's you're standing behind it. These are your 20 steps.
Yeah.
I mean, that I think adds more credibility to YouTube about it.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. No, Aquascape, we just celebrated our 25th year of business last year.
Wow.
So we've been around and you know, trying to test as much product as possible. We actually have an R&D division in our Chicago area, where our head office is, just in St. Charles, Illinois. If anyone's passing through there, definitely check out Aqualand.
Ooh, is that really what it's called, Ernest? Is that really what it's called?
It is called Aqualand.
Oh, my goodness. Gary, come on. You've got to have a comeback for that.
I don't know, man. It sounds fishy to me.
Yeah.
It's fishy out here.
And we have the world's biggest water slide at Aqualand.
No, it's a one-of-a-kind workplace facility, definitely. One massive pond out front. Definitely, you know, I encourage anyone to go to the website and take a look at that. And that was designed and built with a number of our certified contractors.
Okay.
We have a certification process that we encourage landscape professionals to go through. So that would be another thing I'd mention to homeowners, mm-hmm. if they are looking for a pond contractor, is to look for someone who has put some time and effort into being trained and being certified to build ponds.
That's a great segue. That was our next topic,
yeah.
Ernest. Thank you.
Nice.
You segued yourself. That was perfect. So if
That's
homeowners
fun.
Are looking for contractors and they realize that it's too big of a project or they want to do that, then that's great to know. That. So there are Aquascape certified contractors.
Yeah.
Is that how hard of a process is that?
It's not hard at all. We have a locator on our website. They can just you know, almost pre-qualify themselves to those contractors, you know, indicate, you know, what stage of the game, if you will, they're at.
Okay.
If they're just, you know, testing the waters, want to see what's available, they can indicate that. Or, you know, I'm ready to buy, I've already done some research, and, you know, what can you offer me? And our locator will send it out to three CAC, Certified Aquascape Contractors, in their area, and they'll, you know, receive an email within a day or two from those companies, and they can follow up from that aspect.
Okay. And from the contractor side, what is it? What's involved in being certified?
Oh, that we try to make it, you know, not as difficult as possible, but we definitely want to, you know, make those folks the best of the best.
Okay.
So there's a fair bit of training that we provide and we ask them to take part in.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, a few networking events we want them to be a part of. You know, when you can rub shoulders with folks that have been doing things for, you know, a long time, you know, your company does much better. And
right,
so we have
events
that we put on for contractors to attend, and we kind of make it as part of that process. There is some, you know, an online training component, which is,
good.
You know, not the difficult side of it, but it's just, it's something to do. It's education. They're learning, they're, you know, gaining knowledge. And then it comes down to how they run their businesses, really. And
mm-hmm.
so we want to see, you know, some, obviously construction videos. We want to see what their, or pictures, how they've done, what they did, as well as the testimonials from at least three installations that they've completed.
Okay.
And it's every 2 years we require this recertification. So it's an ongoing process, and we kind of want to keep them accountable to themselves and to us and ultimately to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do take that quite seriously as far as our desire to make sure that, you know, the ponds are done right and the customers are served right.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's good to know that it's not just, you know, a 10-minute, you
yeah.
know,
sure.
watch
yeah,
this 10-minute video and you're now certified to install a pond.
So no, I think that's... calls I get just yeah. of, you know what, I've been building, you know, for a long time. Can't you just, you know, give me a little rubber stamp and let it go? And, we've kind of taken that power away from all of us, so we need to...
Good to know.
Yeah, we want them to. It's just, you know, we want to take that seriously. The customers expect it, and, you know, the homeowner wants to be... you know, taken care of and, mm-hmm. and not, yeah.
Okay.
What a great value to you.
So. Yeah, for sure.
The contractors and the homeowners.
Yeah, so we've covered a lot. Oh, my goodness. Lots to talk. We've still got some time, so.
Yeah. So, Ernest, just coming from the garden center kind of background, people always ask about pumps.
Mm-hmm.
What size do I need? Does this work? What do we need to consider? How do we choose the right pump?
Great question. Yeah, I know there's, I don't know how many, you know, aquarium people have called and said, I've got my little, you know, aquarium pump and I want to, you know, put it in my, you know, 8-foot pond, you know. And that kind of thing. And
you can't do like, that. No.
Wait a minute.
You're going to end up with a small little trickle, you know, just a stream of water. So the thought is you want enough power, water volume.
Okay.
Moving through that pump. And so a couple calculations are how far away the pump needs to run. So from one end of the pond, again, one of the principles of pond building is circulation. We want to circulate all the water in the pond, so from one end to the other. So we want to account for that distance as well as height. How high up does that pump need to power from water level to the start of the waterfall? Each pump has a performance chart, basically a technical spec, if you will, that says how much power that pump can provide at various head heights. There's a fluid technical term, but it's basically measuring the effect of gravity on the performance of that pump.
Okay.
So from water level, if it needs to pump up 5 feet, we call that 5 feet of head height.
Okay.
Now, distance is a little different because if I'm pumping it 15 feet away, it's not really 15 feet of head height. So for every 10 feet of distance equals 1 foot of head height. So 15 feet would equate to about a foot and a half of head height on the performance of the pump. The other factor to consider is the width of the spillway, so of the stream the width of the weir width, basically, of the expectation of that water. So I kind of want, you know, depending on the waterfall, I want to have, you know, maybe half inch of water flowing over that rock.
Okay.
So in order to calculate that, a quick rule of thumb is just about 1,500 gallons per hour per foot of waterfall is a comfortable number, if you will.
And
that gives a good half inch of flow coming over a waterfall.
And when you say 1 foot of waterfall, you mean like 1 foot width of waterfall. That spillway is
one foot width. Yeah.
Okay. So with 2 feet, you're going to have a 3,000.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And that's the calculation at that spot. So on top of that, you're going to consider how far away it's going and how high up it's going to go. So when I look at my performance chart, if my skimmer box or where my pump is sitting, I guess I didn't really go over... building the pond, but pumps we like to put in what we call skimmer boxes.
Okay.
Everyone's familiar with pools,
mm-hmm.
Pool skimmer. Our submersible pumps we put in the skimmer. That way we're drawing water across the surface of the pond, pulling any debris and sticks and leaves and other things off to one little skimmer box, which has a basket in it, and you can empty it out. But that is your furthest distance, and then you're going to pump it. Say we're going 15 feet away, and up maybe 2 feet. So we're looking at, say, 3.5 feet of head height. On the performance chart, if I've got a 2 foot wide waterfall, somewhere along the stream, I have 2 feet wide, and I want to make sure that it's full of water coming over that stream, then I want to say at those dimensions, 15 feet and 2 feet of head height, 3.5 feet of head height, I want to have 3,000 gallons an hour.
Okay.
So when I look at I go to the retailer, or the garden center, or the stone yard, wherever is carrying aquascape product, I want to look at a pump that's going to be doing that at that spot. So multiple pumps available. We've tried to design pumps for their application. So we have pumps that are designed for ponds, for skimmers. We do have pumps that are designed to go directly in the pond as well.
Okay.
Sort of solids handling pumps.
Yeah.
And then we have pumps that are designed for some of those fountainscape products, just decorative bubbling features. So looking for a skimmer pump, our line is the AquaSurge pump. I want to look at maybe the 4,000 gallon per hour pump, because if I go with the 3,000, when I look at the chart and I have 3 feet of head height, it's not actually doing 3,000 gallons per hour at that spot. So I'm going to go with something bigger.
Something bigger. Okay.
So that at that spot, it's doing what I want it to do.
Okay. Now for the smaller water features, so go back to my example about, you know, putting a pump inside
a little container garden.
Yeah, like
something.
A little, like a nice ceramic pot, you know, like a 20-inch high ceramic pot, and having that sit in the garden. Is that, are there, I know we're not going to use the fish tank pump, right?
So, no, but we have smaller, they're magnetically driven pumps, mag drive pumps. They use very little power, and they just convert the magnet power, basically the positive and negative polarities are attached to a propeller or impeller, and it spins and provides it sucks water in and pushes it up. So for some of those, ceramic pots, 20 inches or so, I might use, we have a 320 statuary pump, 320 gallon per hour. That'll get a good flow coming out of that. And the nice thing about those, you can actually, we have bigger ones where you have, you can attach it at, I'm going to say T, or a three-way splitter.
Okay.
So you could actually have multiple things running. Maybe you could have a spitting frog off one side, up through your ceramic urn. You could have it attached into the pond as well, or has a standalone feature too.
Okay.
We have anywhere from, our pumps range from 70 gallons per hour, so really small statuary pumps. Mimicking some of those maybe tabletop water fountains.
Oh, okay.
Or even, some of the little ceramic urns or little bowls and other things like that. Up to, in our catalog, we have up to 10,000 gallons per hour and available to the landscape professional or pumps in the, hundreds of thousands of gallons per hour. So,
wow.
Tens of thousands.
That helps definitely. So there's going to be wherever the homeowner goes, so retail locations, there will be what you call the performance chart that can kind of help them.
Yeah, and we put that right on the packaging as well.
Okay.
They can look at each pump and see what it's doing. And so we try to give the name of the pump, the gallons per hour that it's doing. So our Ultra 400 is kind of doing the 400 gallons per hour.
Okay.
Zero head height, if you will.
Now, when it comes to budgeting for a pond, should then people start looking at, this is how much, because that is that the most expensive thing, I would think, right? Would be the pump? Or one of the most expensive things?
Okay,
so would that kind of be a way for them to budget? Like, say, I want this size price point for a pump, and then kind of base it. I guess that's probably looking at it backwards, right?
It's kind of looking at it backwards.
Okay.
So I would hesitate to go that route.
Okay.
That kind of comes to, I want this pond size, but I can only afford this pump, so I'm going to go with a smaller pump, and then the whole system kind of doesn't work properly because you're not turning the water over enough.
Right.
And other things like that. So really, it almost has to be...
I guess I was thinking, pick the pump and then start digging your hole. As opposed to that. Like digging a hole that's too big kind of thing, right?
Exactly. Just coming down to, making it work for what you can do with your yard. And if it means, saving for a little longer so you can get the proper size pump, then I would do that.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
So we're moving all this water, Ernest. Are all these pumps also filters? Does this count as a filter, these pumps?
It doesn't.
Ooh, okay.
Moving the water is just one aspect of that pond recipe. The filtration side is a whole other side. So pumps, all they do is move water from A to B and back to A. And you're really missing out on the filtration side. So I mentioned about the skimmer being part of that filtration system. That's your mechanical filtration, so it's physically removing debris.
Okay.
And then there's biological filtration. I mentioned earlier about, you know, the nitrogen cycle and working with natural processes. So a true filter is really using beneficial bacteria, giving it an area to grow and build and use up the ammonia and the nitrites that are being built up in the pond and naturally filtering that water. So just having a pump and liner isn't a filtered pond. You're right. We get that question often. It's okay. Like, well, I've got a foam filter on the end of my pump. Isn't that, you know, good enough for filtration? But no, you really want to have a separate filter system.
Okay. And that's neat that it can be a beneficial bacteria. So that's like something that you're adding to the water?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So the other aspect is, In a natural system, all that beneficial bacteria is being picked up as the water passes, you know, through tree roots and swamps and bogs. In a closed system like we've created in our ponds with liner, we need to add that beneficial bacteria to the pond.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it, once it's added, it grows and cultivates, and especially if there's fish present, the ammonia and nitrates that are released by them feeds the plants that are there, and the fish, you know, use up the plants and algae, and they create more waste. You end up this really neat circle of life happening.
Yeah, for sure.
If you listen carefully, you can hear the Lion King music going.
That's good. Now, is it something that you have to, I just picture now, like those little tabs that I have to test the pool water with. Like, are we testing our pond water, like, weekly or daily?
No, nice thing about it, it somewhat balances itself.
Okay.
And we've tried to design the water treatments to be as user-friendly as possible.
Excellent.
So, Matthew might remember years ago when we had, when I started with the company, it almost seemed like you needed a bit of a chemistry degree to, you know, balance the water. Two parts per, 1,000 grams of this. And but now
like
we've
the pool.
Simplified
oh my gosh,
it to, as a pump top bottle. Basically, if they know the volume of water within their pond, maybe I'll throw another calculation to your listeners, is take the length of the pond times the width, and because we've created shelves, I don't want to really just take the depth. I want to take an average depth and then multiply that by 7.48.
Wow.
And if everyone remembers back from, grade 8 physics class, that's the calculation for figuring how many gallons will fit into a cubic foot.
Okay.
So I take,
lost me a while ago, but
you
go ahead.
8 by 10, 80 feet, take that by, if I'm going to go 2 feet, my average is about a foot.
Okay.
And then, so 8 by 10 by a foot, roughly, or even 1.2 or so, an average depth, and then multiply that by 7.48, and you're looking at about 700 gallons, 720 gallons or so of water. So now I know in that pond, I've got 700 gallons. We've made it so that the water treatments are a measured dose with each squirt of the water treatment.
Oh,
so our beneficial bacteria, for this pond example, it would be 7 squirts of that, into that water feature. At the beginning of the season, I might do it twice a week. Throughout the season, I might be doing it every other week or every week.
So it's not too bad then. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have to do the testing. Okay.
Yeah, so we have, and unfortunately, it's funny because we've tried to make it as simple as possible, yet it seems difficult for some. And we're all busy, and it's not a priority. So we've actually come up with an automatic dosing system, which is, as simple as it gets.
Oh, wow.
Basically, you plug it in. It operates like an IV for the pond.
Okay.
And it twice a day it'll pump in. It actually is a similar pump to an IV, peristatic pump, and so it just pumps in the required dosage for that pond, takes the guesswork out of the treatment of that pond.
Wow, that's great. Wow, we've covered a lot, Ernest.
Great.
Time has flown. Oh my goodness.
Oh wow.
Yeah, look at the time. I know. So I think we've covered a lot and given a really great overview for our listeners.
Great.
Is there anything like you'd like to promote? I mean, in addition to your YouTube channel, your catalog, mm-hmm. your website, are you doing any events? Anything else that you'd like to promote to our listeners?
You know what? One of the fun things we as a company had a couple years ago was we had an opportunity to be part of a TV show. And so if anyone subscribes to Nat Geo Wild, you can look up the Pawn Stars.
Oh, okay.
And then if you're on YouTube, there's another one that we tried was the Aquascape Pawn Squad. And it was just ways we tried to communicate to consumers what they can have in their yard. And so it's very visual. They're kind of fun episodes if you're into reality, quote-unquote, TV shows.
Yeah.
But those are two items. The other side is just, visit our website, visit our YouTube channel, visit the retailers that are carrying our product. We have a list of retailers on our website as well. Get inspired. Really just add water feature. One of our exciting things we like to say, and it's true, about 80% of pond owners bought a pond. They say they bought a pond because they saw a pond or a water feature.
Okay.
So definitely, my encouragement is to take a look and see what can be done in your yard, whether it's a big elaborate water feature that someone builds for you, or like you said, just a little, everyone's seen those little cistern pumps that can attach to a little whiskey barrel and create a little water feature of your own.
Okay.
Just definitely add water to your yard.
Add water. Well, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Ernest. Yes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ernest. It was
You're
great.
Welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. I learned a lot. So I'm sure our listeners have as well. So thank you. And we'll be in touch.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks bye for now.
Much. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Night, Ernest.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. We learned a lot.
Fantastic information.
So if you couldn't write down those calculations fast enough, there will be a recording on my website so you can listen back and pause and write those down. So I hope you check that out at downtoearth.ca, the number 2. Give me 24 hours or so to get it up there. But I wanted to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, Matt, for being my co-host tonight.
And thanks for having me again, Joanne. And thank you, Ernest, for coming on the show.
Yeah, I know. I think ponds and water features is a great topic.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us on Down the Garden Path here on Reality Radio 101.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.